Central Virginia made national news this month after an animated video about inequality was shown at a Glen Allen High School Black History Month assembly. It was supposed to be an opportunity to have a constructive dialogue about racial issues, but some people complained. Fox News picked up the story, and it went viral. Joining us to discuss the issue is Jonathan Zur, president of the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities. Welcome to WCVE.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
Let's start with a little bit of background. The four-minute animated video is titled The Unequal Opportunity Race, and it was produced by the African American Policy Forum. Four runners appear at a starting line of a racetrack. Two white runners take off, while two runners of color have a delayed start, and then they face numerous obstacles that represent things like slavery, segregation, discrimination, and racial profiling. As the white male runner completes more laps, he's shown with a growing baton symbolizing wealth, which he passes off to a younger white male. He finishes first, followed closely by the white female. The runners of color do not finish the race at all. Jonathan Zur, what's your impression of this video as a learning tool to illustrate structural inequality?
Well, I think part of the challenge that has come up with this video is that folks are not thinking about and talking about these things in multiracial or mixed groups on a regular basis. And so I could see for a white student or white educator who has not thought about these things before and not explored them to see this video and have it be particularly jolting. That doesn't mean it's inaccurate. That doesn't mean that it's incorrect. For I think students of color and for the community broadly, I think folks can look at it and if we're thinking rationally, see, yes, we are inheriting a particular history when it comes to race in this country and racial inequality in this country. So I think the real key in terms of this video is how it can be part of a broader conversation, that if it's a standalone, that it really does not provide the opportunity for processing and learning, especially for those for whom it is the first time they're thinking and talking about these issues.
We don't know exactly how many parents or students complained about the video. The district said they received, quote, numerous emails and phone calls objecting to it. Officials called it a grave concern. They apologized and they banned it from being shown again. What do you think of their response?
I wish that the district had the opportunity to facilitate more of a conversation around this. I can understand when they're getting a significant negative pushback to put out a response which immediately shuts down the use of this video. And I hope that in the larger view, they might be able to understand the context in which it was shown and the opportunity that exists to have more conversation rather than less. As I said earlier, the challenge here, I think, is that folks aren't talking about these things, aren't thinking about these things. The examples of structural racism are not embedded into our curriculum, so students aren't learning about that history in ways that would allow them to have a mature, thoughtful conversation. Students often rise to the challenge when it comes to these conversations, and unfortunately, we see sometimes that adults might have more fear or concern. And I hope that the school division can use this as a teachable moment and an opportunity for more engagement rather than shutting down the conversation.
Do you have any concerns that this could have a chilling impact on educators who want to start having these discussions in their classrooms?
I hope that it doesn't create a climate of fear, but I know that anytime issues like this are picked up locally and nationally in the news, educators have said to us in the past that they do sometimes feel like they need to watch their backs, that they aren't sure how to engage in difficult conversations, that they are concerned about parent complaints or student complaints and responses. And that's why the district really has a responsibility to move forward thoughtfully and delicately to create the environment in which critical engagement does take place, that we're not glossing over our history, but we're giving students the opportunity to engage more thoughtfully and directly. And so educators need to know that they're supported to have those conversations. And the response to date has been, I think, a little bit blurry for them around what they can and cannot do.
This might also be a case where what's portrayed by the media isn't reflective of what's happening on the ground. One teacher I heard from, who's been at the school since it opened, says he feels Glen Allen is diverse and inclusive, and he hasn't heard from a single person who was offended or who felt the video's intent was divisive. He also says that within Glen Allen, teachers and students are having intelligent conversations about race. And the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities has also worked with Glen Allen students and teachers in the past. Jonathan Zuhr, what have you done there?
Most recently, Glen Allen High School sent a team of students to the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities Diversity Dialogue Day Forum. It's a one-day experience that this past year focused on the theme More Than a Stereotype, and students were able to explore how to break down stereotypes, what to do if they are stereotyped, if they're a bystander who sees someone being stereotyped. And the students from Glen Allen High School were particularly mature and thoughtful, and they really stood out at the program in terms of how they responded to those conversations. And that was in light of another incident that happened at Glen Allen High School this past fall. And so those students left with some particular skills and motivation to continue the conversation back at their schools. Over the years, we've also had students from Glen Allen High School participate in the Connections Institute, a week-long summer retreat focused on issues of diversity and inclusion. We've done some workshops in the building for students as well as educators. And each time what we've seen is that students are wanting to have these conversations and are open to engaging in structured and thoughtful ways. And yet that's another case for why the school and the school division need to provide these opportunities rather than prevent them from taking place.
The Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities holds trainings and workshops on many topics related to race and diversity. What have you learned are the most effective ways to teach people, both youth and adults, about structural inequality?
I think the biggest takeaway over the years that I've done this work is that it takes time, that folks are not having these conversations on a day-to-day basis, and that as a white person, I wasn't thinking about these things on a regular basis, and I know when I facilitate these conversations that a lot of white people aren't thinking about these things. When we've engaged in conversations around structural inequality in mixed-race groups, people of color have sometimes said, well, I thought it was just me, or I didn't have the language to understand that this was part of a broader system. There are many who see it and experience it and understand it, but we've also heard the response that they weren't engaging. And so I think that the key thing is to provide time and to provide an opportunity for folks to really engage with their personal experiences. Structural inequality does not mean that white people didn't work hard. It does not mean that people of color cannot succeed, but it does mean that we have a system of policies, of practices, of traditions that push some people up, that give some people more access to opportunity, and push others down. And that's hard for folks the first time. And so providing that time and space, often off-site, creates the opportunity for folks to really think deeply about their responsibility, not necessarily in creating that system, but perhaps in perpetuating it, and what responsibility they have to do something about it.
Do you think that structural inequality could be better integrated into standards of learning?
I think folks need to be talking about and thinking about these things. The history curriculum in particular has so many opportunities for students to think from multiple perspectives. How was this historic event engaged from those who were in charge? How was this experienced by those who did not have power? There are also opportunities to think about it in your math curriculum. I think folks often overlook that in terms of what we see in residual wealth in this country, what we see in terms of percentages of folks who are incarcerated, what we see in terms of healthcare disparities and health outcomes. There's a science application as well. So absolutely, this, if we're preparing students to be engaged citizens and we're preparing students to be globally minded in the 21st century, a critical engagement of how our society functions through structural racism that we've inherited over hundreds of years is the responsibility of schools and school divisions.
There's an exercise called a privilege walk that can be a powerful way to demonstrate different lived experiences. And I had a chance to observe this with a group of Latino young adults who were getting ready to mentor high school students. They all started in a straight line, and then two facilitators begin to pose statements like these.
If you feel good about how your identified culture is portrayed by the media, take one step forward. If you were born in the United States, take one step forward.
If you ever felt uncomfortable about a joke directed at your gender, take one step back. If you ever had a maid, gardener, or cleaning services, take one step forward. If you try to change your speech or mannerisms to gain credibility, take one step back.
After a couple dozen statements, this group of maybe 25, 30 people had spread out over this area outside where they had gathered, and there was no more straight line. And the exercise gave them an opportunity to reflect on how race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, and class affect your journey through life. Jonathan, sir, you've led privilege walk exercises. Can you talk about where you've done these and what was the result?
At the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities, we use activities like this as part of our multi-day retreats. So they become the centerpiece of students building trust and learning about one another and then exploring from a structural level how some have been pushed up or received advantages and others have been pushed down or denied advantages solely based on aspects of their identity. I experienced this as a high school student myself as a participant, and then over the years have been able to facilitate these conversations for students. And we find it when there's enough time to be a really profoundly educational experience that students understand that prejudice goes beyond what Peggy McIntosh calls individual acts of meanness, how I treat you and how you treat me, to really understanding that it's part of a broader system. And even if I have had a positive experience, my experience is not universal. If I've had a negative experience, my experience is not universal. And they really begin to understand, as I did going through this as a student, how there's not a level starting line or how there's not a level starting place. And so when we talk about the American dream being achievable to everyone, just work hard, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, education is the key, that can be true for some people. And that is easier for some than for others based on where we start, based on these structures that create advantage for some and deny for others, again, solely based on identity, not based on individual actions or behaviors.
And I bet an exercise like this, once you get comfortable with the fact that it's a difficult experience to have, helps you go about your daily life recognizing both the advantages and disadvantages that you as an individual experience and that other people are experiencing too.
It really, it's an example, I think, of the quote that once you know, you can't unknow. That for me, as a 15-year-old high school student, white male, grew up in suburban New Jersey, to go through this experience and then to just start to walk through the halls of my school and notice who gets asked for a hall pass and who doesn't. I never was asked for a hall pass as a high school student. I was just able to walk through the building and no one challenged that. When I go to the mall, who gets followed and who doesn't? When I am driving down the street and I notice who's getting pulled over or who's not, my awareness was just so significantly heightened and my consciousness was heightened. And I think for people of color who've gone through this experience, oftentimes what we've heard is, I thought I was the only one. Or I thought it was just me that these things were happening to. I didn't realize it was part of a broader system or structure. And so for all of us, I think the challenge is once we go through an experience like that and our consciousness is raised, then we're observing it everywhere. The question is, how do I do something about this very overwhelming feeling? And so there is a period where we see a lot of participants in activities like this who feel immobilized by the magnitude of the issue. And then we have to work with them to really help build their skills and agency to be able to do something to address those disparities that they're now hyper-conscious of.
When there's a situation like what happened with Glen Allen High School, where there's a national response to something that's happened very locally and it's labeled as controversial, how could parents, students, and school officials use this as an opportunity? If you were in charge of the response, what would you do?
It's a big question. I think the first thing would be to breathe. I think folks need to pause. It's easy in moments of crisis to make rash decisions. And what we really need right now are mature and thoughtful decisions, not rash decisions. And so I think the first thing is to really breathe, to think about what's happening specifically for the students and educators in that building. The national news and noise is important and requires a response, but schools have a key responsibility to students and to educators. How are white students feeling, and how can we continue this conversation to ensure that it's educational for those students? How are students of color feeling right now? Probably vulnerable, probably in the spotlight, maybe marginalized within their building. And so how do we make sure that there's a sense of safety? All of this is going to take time. So I think the school division really needs to consider, how can we make sure that these crucial conversations happen, that the learning happens from them, and that this engagement is done in a way that doesn't create this type of national response in the future. Again, it's not about avoiding the conversation. It's about engaging in ways that create safety, learning, and engagement for all.
Jonathan Zuer is president of the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities. Thanks for joining us on Learning Curve.
It's been my pleasure.
Learning Curve is a production of 88.9 WCVE. Send us your comments, questions, and suggestions to learningcurve@ideastations.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Catherine Comp.